happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're broadcasting live on our studio's sister station WBAI and WPFW, as well as the Progressive Radio Network. I'm still on the road. I'll be on the road for approximately another week and a half, helping individuals who are finishing a one-month program to see what impact can lifestyle and behavior modification impact upon major medically irreversible conditions, serious conditions. And thus far, the results are extremely promising, and you'll be able to hear these people in their own words at the end of this one-month period. Today, female doctors, well, we're told they're better than male doctors. Why is that? Also, flax seeds can reduce primary breast cancer risk substantially. There's a vegetable compound called DIM that offers radiation therapy protection. And if you want to prevent the common cold, I'll give you the latest nutrients known to do that, plus more on health and nutrition. Extended information today on the environment, including Monsanto, rural debt, and the suicide epidemic in India, from a commentary by Belen Fernandez. Also, going back to the oceans again, no safe havens in increasingly acidic oceans. A brand new report that's going to be published next week in Nature magazine. I got a copy of it, and it's really confirming what many of us have been concerned about. We've been letting the oil and gas and coal industries pollute the oceans, and now there's a price to pay. How bad is it? I'll give you that. A lot of people believe that the new smart meters that are being installed in millions of Americans' homes are a good thing because it'll tell you how often you open and close your refrigerator, turning on and off the lights, what temperature your air conditioner or heating is set at. That's how it's being sold. The truth is, an extremely dangerous technology, and it's just another way of collecting data upon us. The latest study from Dr. Donald Hillman and John Holton, Professor Emeritus at MSU, and also Dr. Ronald Powell, who's a PhD from Harvard University. There's a brand new report entitled EMF, that stands for Electromagnetic Field Exposure in Home, Farm, and Classrooms. Scientific examples of the effect, and it's devastating. For those who believe that the National Security Agency should have a double standard, they should be able to lie to us with impunity. If you and I lie before any committee of Congress under oath, That's serious, and we could go to jail for that. But what else were they lying about? Kevin Ryan of Global Research says they were also lying about some aspects of 9/11. Which specific aspects? And why is it important that we understand why this is important? Recently, I was listening to people discuss, yeah, so there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, but it was a good thing that we went there because we got rid of, that's Bill O'Reilly's constant argument, we got rid of Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. We didn't get rid of Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda really didn't exist there until we went in. Do we ever stop and ask, what are the unintended consequences, the collateral damage, as they would say? Well, from the University of Washington Department of Global Health, They're about to publish a report in PLOS magazine that shows how many innocent civilians have died. The numbers are staggering. I'll share that with you. So the next time someone tries to justify Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places that we have been where we shouldn't have, you can remind them of how many people suffered and died because of that. And my guest in the second part of our program is Dr. Brian Hooker. Dr. Hooker is a professor of biology at Northern California and Washington State Universities. He is also with the Coalition for Mercury-Free Drugs. And he's going to tell us how there is danger in the flu vaccine, especially for pregnant women, and how the CDC lied, and give you very specific examples about its lying. So, needless to say, we have a lot to cover. Let's begin. If you're eating your vegetables, especially your cruciferous vegetables, and I'm sure many of you are, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, radishes, kale, all those are good. A new article just published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences shows it's even better. Quote, from the Georgetown Lombardi Comprehensive Cancer Center, here's what it says. DIM has been studied as a cancer preventative agent for years, but this is the first indication that DIM can also act as a radiation protector. And it says that all the untreated rats died, but over 50% of the DIM-treated animals remained alive after radiation exposure. So what is DIM? DIM is a compound. It is a 3,3-diindolylmethane, and it's what you get in the broccoli, cauliflower, all the cruciferous vegetables. So new research shows that it can prevent a lot of the problems that are happening with radiation exposure. I don't tell people whether to take or not take any particular therapy, but we do know, we've all seen people who've taken radiation and chemotherapy, they lost their hair. They frequently die from cachexia, the wasting away, where your tissues just cannibalize each other. This is the direct effect of not the cancer, this is the treatment. And hundreds of thousands of people die each year because of the treatment, not just the cancer. So anything that can mitigate that would be a good thing, because the probability of getting Americans to start living a preventative lifestyle to prevent the cancers, or looking at the most advanced and scientifically based alternative therapies, is almost non-existent. I know that for a fact. Why? Because in the 7 years that I was doing my research on a major documentary on cancer, I visited repeatedly the major cancer centers around the world. And this is just a typical example that I found everywhere. In Germany, at a beautiful clinic that didn't look like a clinic at all, it looked like some form of chalet that you would find in the Swiss Alps. It was hundreds of years old. The wood was thick. The smell of that history was in it. And it was right in front of Tegernsee Lake, which is one of the largest, most beautiful, pristine lakes in Germany. And there was no one outside. I walked in. I didn't see anyone. And finally, I saw a guy on the third floor, and he was tying up his running shoes. And I said, is this the Issel's clinic? He said, yes. I said, where's everyone? He said, they're up on the mountain. And I said, but aren't you supposed to be here because you have terminal cancer? He said, everyone here has got terminal cancer. I said, do you have terminal cancer? He says, yes. He is a dentist. He was from Chicago. He had tried all orthodox therapy. Everyone had tried all orthodox therapy. It hadn't worked. So he came here with just hope, and generally being discouraged by everyone else, including his other oncologist friends. But then I met a woman there whose two sons were oncologists in Texas, whose husband was an oncologist. So when she was diagnosed with the stage 4 cancer, metastasized to liver, bone, brain, she knew that there's no therapy, even though they say, well, we can try this new experimental therapy, but no one's ever recovered from that. So her husband suggested that she and her husband take a cruise and just stay on the cruise, traveling around the world to exotic locales as long as she was physically able to. It might be a few weeks, might be a month. She said it wouldn't have been more than 2 months. And she was going to do that until she heard of someone who had gone to this clinic in Germany, and this German doctor had helped them. And so she said to her family, why shouldn't I go try this? And they all tried to talk her out of this. Quackery, it won't work. There's no scientific evidence. This guy's a nut job. But she said, what the heck? It's her life. She went against her family's suggestions. She was now in her fourth month. She showed me her x-rays. Her cancer was gone by 70%. In fact, she was there each day to help lead some of the meditations. So we go out and we walk up the side of this mountain. Beautiful area, just gorgeous. Tall, beautiful fir trees and other kind of alpine-ish black forest foliage. And there is this pristine giant lake. And then on this little bluff, this little plateau, grassy area, all these people were sitting there and they were having their blood drawn by these lab assistants. And I could see over on the side there was this big blanket laid out, and they had all these giant pitchers of juice, fresh made juice, and some stuff I didn't know what it was. It was something in a salad. And here was this huge man with this long white flowing hair. When he turned around, he looked like a lion. He must have been 6'6", and really handsome features. And that was Dr. Issels. I'd never met him. And he led them in a meditation. And he told them to visualize that they were all on beautiful, beautiful horses. And they were in this perfect armor, shining. And as they would start to walk slowly into this valley of death, and in front of them were millions upon hundreds of millions of death soldiers, cancer cells, that you would draw your sheath, your sword out of your sheath, and you would begin to slowly, but then faster and faster, gallop into the valley of death. And as you were doing this, you would start to kill the cancer cells. Then he went quiet and put on the Overture of 1812. And it's booming out over the lake. And it was like being in Central Park when they're playing it at the end of a concert. And I'm watching. It went on for about 12 minutes. And I'm watching their bodies. And you could see muscles twitching and moving. And you could see their shoulders and their arms. They all had their eyes closed. And they're all sitting on the ground. But I was right behind one person. You could see the hair on their neck just standing up. The person had goosebumps. And then it was over. And he then said, take the blood again. So he took everyone's blood sample again. And then they had lunch. While they were having lunch, I walked back down the hill with him and went into the laboratory section of the clinic. And there on the screen, he had the before and after. And on the before, you could see the blood, and especially the immune modulators he was measuring. And then after, they had doubled. Literally, the natural killer cell activity had become much more powerful. And he said, imagine then thinking in a positive way that you're going to beat this cancer, rather than believing the cancer is going to beat you. He said, that's where we begin our journey of healing here, encouraging people to believe that their life is more valuable, more important than the cancer. And for the next 2 weeks, every day, from early in the morning when he got up at 4 until late at night, I went on all the rounds and I saw all the different therapies. I've never seen so many therapies. Now, he was a surgeon by training. He could do radiation and chemotherapy, but he chose not. He had over 50,000 patients that he had treated successfully. And he had this one collection of terminally ill patients. Now, mind you, he didn't do the diagnosing. He merely did the treatment. And then he had an outside specialist at other hospitals do the final diagnosis. So he merely did treatment. And he had a 16.6% cure rate with terminal patients. That's the highest ever in the history of science. And this was independently confirmed by 3 separate research teams, published in a peer-reviewed journal, even confirmed by a group of physicians sent over by the BBC, who all those physicians I also interviewed back in England, and they confirmed it. And it was all about the environment, and it was about the vegetables, and it was about positive thinking. It was about flooding the body with juices and healing thoughts. So just imagine now that in the United States, we don't think about what happens when we have radiation or chemotherapy. We don't ask for the proof in the double-blind placebo-controlled studies because we wouldn't find them. But when you look around the world at people who've gotten good results, understand that these results were with people who showed up at his door frequently in ambulances, on stretchers. I saw people coming in on life support. And you wonder, how in the world can this man turn this around? It's this far gone. I never saw in all my travels, over 7 years, I never saw relatively healthy people going in at the early stages of their treatment to be treated with alternative therapy. It was always the end. Same way down in Dr. Burton's clinic in the Bahamas. In fact, they had the rooms that people could rent within a block of his clinic because they had to get the treatment every day. And almost always people would be wheelchaired over there with oxygen treated and then sent back. And yet he had a very high success rate. So just imagine if in our society we encouraged people to do something earlier that was more natural. But that's not going to happen. So seeing that's not going to happen, then why shouldn't we, caregivers and people who are aware of what can happen, just start giving them more cruciferous vegetables, more juices, more black cumin seed oil, more omega-3 fatty acids, more vitamin C, more quercetin, more vitamin E. These are the things that turn off inflammation, and that's how cancer is able to thrive and metastasize through inflammation and put that fire out to begin with. Now, another big problem we have in America is we have a lot of people with colds, but they learn to live with them by taking symptom relievers, stopped up nose, runny nose, sore throat, aches and pains. Do something that gets rid of the pain or the inconvenience. Not the best idea. According to a major study, quote, a combination of supplements containing zinc, vitamin C, pycnogenol, and the extract from the French maritime pine bark may be effective in shortening the duration of the common cold and lessening the 7 pillar symptoms, including runny nose, nasal obstruction, sore throat, sneezing, high temperature, cough, and general discomfort. Taking the combination was associated with 3.1 days compared to longer days with a control group. Quote, the results of this study demonstrate the effects of supplement plan using pycnogenol alone or in association with other supplements to reduce the symptoms severity of common cold, said the lead researcher. Now, by the way, pycnogenol, which is a combination of proanthocyanidins and bioflavonoids and organic acids, and it all comes from the bark of the maritime pine. And you probably have had it and didn't realize it was in there. But it also has been shown in really good clinical studies to protect you from cardiovascular, joint, cognitive, and eye health problems. It can help you with PMS, tinnitus, hay fever, hemorrhoidal pain, and menopausal symptoms. It's really good. So 100 milligrams that a day can make a big difference. And one more thing, We have a lot of diabetics who have a problem with hemoglobin A1C. According to a new article in the Annals of Medicine and Health Science Research, this was a major study that found that alpha-lipoic acid, the omega-3 fatty acids, and vitamin E can make a big difference in diabetes. Now, this was a randomized double-blind trial, and they divided people to get either the placebo or 300 milligrams for 90 days of alpha-lipoic acid, the EPA and DHA at 400 milligrams, and vitamin E, or placebo. And the ones that got placebo had no benefit, but those that got these nutrients had a, quote, "the results of the study demonstrate that antioxidants, alpha-lipoic acid, the omega-3 fatty acids, and vitamin E showed encouraging decrease in blood glucose and the ABA1C with no adverse effects, and these antioxidants may be used in patients with type 2 diabetes mellitus." So one more way to help about 100 million Americans, 25 to 28 million, with diagnosed with diabetes, and an awful lot of pre-diabetics who don't even know they're diabetic. University of Montreal. According to the University of Montreal research team, the quality of care provided by female doctors is higher than that of their male counterparts, while the productivity of males is greater. They looked at 770 Quebec practitioners, half men, half women, and then they looked at this. So I think a lot of people are more interested in the quality of care than the quantity of care. So maybe the men doctors should pay attention. It can make a difference. University of East Finland, higher omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acid content protects against brain abnormalities. Published by the American Heart Association, quote, "in the cardiovascular health study, 3,660 people aged 65 and older underwent brain scans to detect so-called silent brain infarcts, or small lesions in the brain that can cause loss of thinking skills, dementia, and stroke." And research shows that silent brain infarcts, which are only detected by brain scans, are found in about 20% of otherwise healthy elderly people. But when you start taking your omega-3 fatty acids, very important that that reduces that substantially, and therefore you're able to protect your brain and protect your overall health. Now, why is this important? Because another study published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, the medical journal of the American Academy of Neurology, done at the University of Pittsburgh, found that in the elderly, hardening of the arteries is linked to plaques in the brain. Quote, "even for elderly people with no signs of dementia, those with hardening of the arteries are more likely to also have the beta amyloid plaques in the brain that are a hallmark of Alzheimer's disease." Quote, "this is more evidence that cardiovascular health leads to a healthy brain." And that was from a Dr. Hughes at the university. Now, why do I share this with you? Because it was some years ago that President Bill Clinton went in for his annual checkup, which all presidents are supposed to have. And normally they go to specialists who give them comprehensive examinations, far more than what the average person would receive, and supposedly by the best and brightest physicians. He was given a clean bill of health. And I remember at the time thinking, that's not possible. Then these people missed it. 3 weeks later, he was rushed in for triple bypass surgery, or he would have died. They missed it. All right, he began a long recovery, and at some point in that recovery, he was introduced to a nutritionist who got him on to a more vegan diet with more raw foods, and good for him. I'm glad to see that he is doing well, and I hope that he does much better. But I said at the time, and I will say it again, you cannot have inflammation of the heart and the arteries and the lining of the arteries, the epithelium, and not also have the same identical inflammation in the brain. Why? Simple physiology. inflammatory markers like cytokines and prostaglandins, tumor necrosis factor markers, they are in your blood, and your blood circulates through the whole body, including the brain, and brings the debris and carbon dioxide out so it can be expelled through the kidneys, liver, skin, and lungs. But they never looked at his brain. And I said that within the next 10 years, I hope I'm wrong, but I believe that I'm going to be correct on this, Bill Clinton will be suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's. Now, needless to say, that will not be made public. It'll be hidden, and they'll do all that they can, but there's no drugs or medication or medical procedures within Orthodox medicine to address any of that. And whereas in alternative medicine, there's a lot that can be done. And so if anyone knows the Clintons, and just you should know that there are therapies that could help turn off inflammation and repair the damage that was done. Because if you looked inside his brain, I'm willing to bet that you would find all forms of those plaque infarcts that you wouldn't notice unless you did a specific examination, because inflammation in one part of the body is inflammation in every part of the body. The difference is in some parts of the body will manifest that inflammation differently, and that's important. All right? So, and I believe that everyone deserves to be as healthy and happy as they can be. I don't care about his politics or what he did in office or out of office. You know, I just care that everyone should know that there are protocols, programs that are available today from a more holistic model. And it's no secret. I mean, I'm going to be doing two lectures in the next 6 months, one before, I'm guessing, about 7,000 scientists, another before 5,000 scientists, on my own work on helping with brain recovery. And so the information is out there. This isn't something obscure. You just got to know where to look. But at least not only do you have that information now, but others have it as well. We're out of time with our health and nutrition segment that ran almost a half hour, a little longer than normal. I do want to mention two quick things before we go to our guest who's standing by. We've been led to believe that, you know, whatever our initial resistance going into Iraq and whatever we found were not the actual truce, it was still worth it. I disagree on all levels. This is from PLOS Medicine, one of the most respected medical peer-reviewed journals in the world. Quote, new estimates given up account of Iraq war deaths between 2003 and 2011. And this is from the University of Washington Department of Global Health, published today. It says, now this is not the people killed in conflict. This is other people killed who were killed because of infrastructural, nutrition, no clean water, and other things that can kill you when you're in a war zone. And it says, researchers state with 95% certainty that there were approximately 461,000 excess deaths during the Iraq war, but the number could be as high as 751,000 deaths. And now mind you, these are 751,000 civilians. So for all of you who supported this effort, just keep in mind, did any of these 700,000 deserve to die, the men, women, and children? I think not. And yet the people who continue to propose war after war, invasion after invasion, including some on this radio station with Libya and now Syria and other places, do they ever stop and ask, what would it mean to be a civilian in any of those conflict zones? But they don't. I just wanted you to know the facts. Let's take a break, come back, and we'll be with my guest. Please stay with us. let's go over and say hello to a newsmaker guest standing by, Dr. Brian Hooker. I gave you his background earlier. His website is mercury-freedrugs.org. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Null. It's very, very good to be with you. I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show.
Well, you have some information that could really be important for people in this audience, and that is because we have been encouraged as a nation, everyone, to get our flu shots, especially pregnant women. And we've been given some assurances these flu shots are safe and effective. So would you please speak out on your latest research on the three different studies that you've carefully reviewed, the 2010 Price study, the Gary Goldman 2012 article, and the increase in miscarriages after women receive the H1N vaccine, and the CDC's Morrow study of 2011, which claims were no risk to pregnant women. Could you take us on that journey now?
Right. I do want to encourage, I think this probably goes without saying, don't get the flu shot. I mean, do not. And I'm very, very concerned regarding the maternal flu shot. Recent CDC data show that about 53% of all pregnant women received a flu shot during their term of pregnancy in 2012. And that, to me, regarding what these different studies say, it's extremely alarming. If you go to the first study that you mentioned, the Price study from the CDC, I was actually given the background report to the Price study. Now, the Price study claims that the risk for regressive autism spectrum disorder goes up by 86% in women that received the this was 16 micrograms of thimerosal via either the flu shot or there are some other medications that are injected during pregnancy like the Rho G antibodies, but that was just 16 micrograms of mercury. The current flu shot, the seasonal flu shot, contains 25 micrograms of mercury. And so the original paper, when you look at the paper in pediatrics, it says there's an 86% increase in risk of having a child that will regress into autism spectrum disorder. Now, the background report, they actually ran the same statistics six different times. And oddly enough, when the statistics were run in a what I would consider, you know, I am an epidemiologist. I do statistics for a living. The most robust models showed that the risk was actually 800%. So an individual receiving just 16 micrograms of mercury through thimerosal, that's and wake up people, this is in the flu shot, were eight times more likely to have a child that would regress into autism spectrum disorder. So, and that was very conveniently, it was highly statistically significant result, and it was very conveniently removed from the Price study paper. Never appeared in print in the journal Pediatrics. And so in my mind, CDC committed fraud, and they also know that there's a very, very high risk of getting autism spectrum disorder for those women that received the flu shot. Okay, so that's the first study.
Take us to the second one, please.
The second study, that is the Goldman study. This came out in 2012. And it was based on a reporting system called VAERS. This is the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System that is sponsored by the CDC. And this particular study looked at when women received, while pregnant, not only the seasonal flu shot, but the H1N1 flu shot that was given in the 2009-2010 flu season. And what Dr. Goldman reported was that he saw an 11-fold increase in miscarriages, 11-fold, that's 1,100% increase in miscarriages reported due to the flu shot. Both of those contained mercury, both 25 micrograms of mercury, and the increased mercury caused miscarriages to increase by 11-fold. Now, oddly enough, if you go to the third study, that's the Morrow study. This was a CDC study that was published in 2011. The Morrow study said that there was really no risk of increased risk of miscarriages, or no risk of adverse events due to the flu shot. Okay, but if you look at Morrow further, Morrow's very the way they analyzed their data was very odd. But what Morrow says, when you actually look at the text of the report, and most physicians will never look at the text of these reports, Morrow reports that in that period where they gave the seasonal flu shot and the H1N1 flu shot, that there was actually a 25-fold increase in miscarriages in women that received those vaccinations, okay? And it could have been the seasonal. They didn't really distinguish which one it was. It could have been the seasonal. It could have been the H1N1. It could have been both, okay? But very duplicitously, when you look at the abstract of the report, and any physician that has enough time to look at any of this is probably just going to look at the abstract. And I quote, the abstract of the Morrow report says, review of reports to VAERS following H1N1 vaccination in pregnant women did not identify any outcome, any concerning patterns of maternal or fetal outcomes. Okay, so in other words, they said that there was nothing there. But if you look clearly in the text of the paper, they report a 25-fold increase in miscarriages.
How can they get away with this?
Well, the CDC does this out all the time. You know, I have been studying submitting FOIA requests to the Centers for Disease Control since 2004. I've actually tried to interact with their scientists starting in 2002. I've submitted over 100 FOIA requests, and the CDC, in communicating what they think is risk of infectious disease, this is an agency that's fixated improperly on infectious disease, they do what's called risk communication, and in their version of risk communication, lying is an acceptable practice. So as long as they can get individuals to behave in a fashion where they want them to behave, okay, to increase pharmaceutical company profits, specifically around the flu vaccine, then they make sure that women receive their flu shots, pregnant women.
But that also means that they're able to lie repeatedly to the National Vaccine Council, to the Advisory Commission on Childhood Vaccines, and they do so with impunity.
That is correct. There were three separate meetings where the CDC was supposed to communicate the risk of the H1N1 flu shot to different governing bodies. The first one was the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, ACIP. The second one was the National Vaccine Advisory Committee. The third one was the Advisory Committee on Childhood Vaccines that looks at vaccine injuries to children and infants, and they lumped in the maternal H1N1 shot because that would be presumably and in fact indeed harmed fetuses. Okay, and in each instances, rather than reporting that 25-fold increase in miscarriages, they said that there was no risk associated, no significant risk associated with the maternal flu shot. In one report, they said that current studies show that maternal immunization benefits the mother and the infant and have not identified any vaccine-related adverse events specific to vaccinated pregnant women and their infants, which is a lie on both cases. We have the Morrow report and the Goldman report, both that showed that there was an increase in miscarriages. And then we have the Price report showing a very strong uptick in regressive autism spectrum disorder.
I just have one last issue, but it'll be broken into two parts.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the film that I just completed? I haven't released it yet. It's called The Silent Epidemic.
I have. I've heard of it. And I am eagerly waiting for the release of this.
Right.
These are the types of movies that I want to go to the theater to see.
Okay. I'm going to see you get a copy from Richard Gower, producer, today.
Great.
After producing Vaccine Nation and also Autism Made in the USA, something hit me, and it really hit me when I was in Chicago, and there were about 400 children and their parents there for a National Autism Conference. And most of the kids were in the one of three different health support groups, the DAN group, which was based on a mainly rebalancing bacterial gut flora and some natural chelation. And there were a couple other holistic protocols, but all the kids had made progress. Every single parent that I interviewed, including six physicians whose children had been damaged by the vaccines, who acknowledged that, all said the same thing. We support vaccination. We just don't support bad lots, hot lots. You know, we want more science behind them, more assurances of safety. I then interviewed Dr. Andrew Wakefield, and in my first interview with Wakefield, he said he is very much pro-vaccine. He just wanted the measles mumps separate from the measles mumps rubella vaccine. Everyone I was interviewing in the whole field of vaccine damage believed in vaccines, doctors, scientists, and I said, something's wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent 4 years looking at all the world's literature, every article I could find in the world, and I asked a simple question. Are vaccines proven safe by any gold standard, and are they proven effective for any given individual? Because I saw too many contradictions. Kids that were fully vaccinated for measles came down with measles. Fully vaccinated for chickenpox came down with chickenpox. And then went back and looked at the whole history of vaccinology. And what I found is I found about 47 medical doctors and scientists, specialists in their field, who said there's no science. And then that kind of shakes the whole premises. If our entire field of immunology is based upon the idea that you become immune when you're vaccinated, and yet that is a jump that has never been solidified. So that's the new documentary and the proof that we present. But in presenting that proof, two things came up. One was this scientist working for the CDC who completed 21 of 24 studies that supposedly prove no link between any vaccine or mercury and autism. Now we know that that doctor is a fraud, that he is a criminal. He is on the most wanted list in the world. And separately is that we can prove absolutely, unequivocally, from their own words that were recorded, that a large group of scientists from the CDC, the FDA, the U.S. Public Health Service, the World Health Organization, and all the vaccine manufacturers were met in Simpsonwood, a religious retreat in the Carolinas, and they held a secret meeting. No one was supposed to take any records of anything, and they agreed that a new study showed that of 100,000 children, there was a statistically high level of autism spectrum disorder in the vaccinated, and then they spent the rest of the retreat figuring out how to cover it up. Now, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., through the Freedom of Information Act, got this information, and he's the one who gets credit for bringing it to our attention. But on the one hand, we have all these people acknowledging there's a connection, and how do we cover up? And then we have this doctor who is the CDC's go-to person, the whole vaccine industry. Look at this study. It shows that, you know, there's no link. And he's proven to be a fraud, yet the FDA, CDC has never retracted his statements and continues to use that as, oh, you see, there is no association. Would you address the two phenomena I just discussed? The fact that if you look at the actual literature, you cannot find that any given vaccine or combination of vaccines have been proven safe or effective for any given individual, and you'll find that there's over 300 vaccines in development right now. They want to vaccinate you for everything, and yet they refuse to acknowledge the bad science behind the so-called there is no connection between vaccines and autism. Your thoughts, please.
There are no data that will support the efficacy and safety of vaccines. There are no data that will support the efficacy and the safety of the current infant immunization schedule. I no longer believe in vaccination. I looked at all of them. I had individuals ask me which vaccine should I get. And I take that type of question seriously. So I looked at the information on every vaccination that was given. I looked at the alternatives to vaccination, and the risks just do do not the benefits in no way, shape, or form will outweigh the risks of receiving one single vaccination. I just think I'm pro immunization, and immunization is different. That is when the body naturally acquires immunity through natural exposure, through natural pathways to different pathogens. But I am not pro-vaccination, and I just don't see the science being there to support the efficacy or the safety of vaccines. I think that you're really taking a lot of risks by getting vaccinated. Dr. Paul Thorson, the individual who was indicted in Atlanta federal court in 2011 for embezzling CDC funds, he was charged with 22 counts of both embezzlement and money laundering. He did write 36 total papers in collaboration with the CDC scientists, and he continued to write papers and publish papers up through the end of 2012 with CDC scientists. None of them were retracted. None of the CDC scientists took their names off of these publications, even when they were impressed and they had the opportunity to. And last year at there was a congressional hearing, and the director of the National Center for Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities said that she saw no reason to retract or even revisit the papers that were co-authored by Paul Thorson, although there is an obvious pattern of illegal activity. My own Freedom of Information Act request shows several instances where data were withheld from the Denmark cohort. That cohort has been fraudulently used. This is the children that are on the Danish registry, both children with autism and non-autistic controls. Those data were misused, and they were manipulated basically to show no relationship between mercury and vaccines and autism, and no relationship between the MMR vaccine and autism. And so there is the entire issue of the CDC's both recalcitrance and obdurate behavior in terms of not revisiting that information, even though Paul Thorson is not only an indicted individual in Atlanta court, but he's also a fugitive.
I appreciate your input. Thank you for your good research on this. What I have found in the 37 scientists I interviewed, they were all pro-vaccine until they did their homework. And the more homework they did, the angrier they became at themselves. Because as one of the medical doctors, MD, PhD, said in the film, when I think of how many innocent people I ended up assaulting their body with the vaccine because of my own hubris and indifference to the truth. Now I know the truth, and that person speaking out. Thank you, Dr. Brian Hooker, professor of biology, for speaking out on this issue.
Thank you, Dr. Null. I really appreciate being on your show.
And his website is mercury-freedrugs.org, mercury-freedrugs.org. Dr. Brian Hooker, H-O-O-K-E-R, professor of biology in Northern California. I'm Gary Null. Let me just finish up by going to some of the additional information. I told you earlier in the show from our environmental segment, I'm going to talk about the oceans. These are the latest studies, and again, I'm always reviewing the scientific literature every morning around the world. No safe havens in increasingly acid oceans. And this is from Steve Leahy from Common Dreams. Quote, oil, gas, and coal are contaminating the world's oceans from top to bottom, threatening the lives of more than 800 million people. Quote, it took a year to analyze and synthesize all the studies on the impacts of climate change on ocean species. This was from a Dr. Mora, an ecologist, University of Hawaii in Honolulu. And this was supposed to be a groundbreaking climate study. It's being published next week in Nature magazine. Quote, it's very sad to see all the responses were negative. We were hoping there might be some safe havens. The study found that carbon emissions from burning fossil fuels are overheating the oceans, turning them acidic and reducing the amount of oxygen in seawater. This is happening too fast for most marine species to adapt, and ocean ecosystems around the world will collapse. The impacts of climate change will be felt from the ocean surface to the seafloor. It is truly scary to consider how vast these impacts will be, end quote, from Professor Andrew Sweetman, International Research Institute in Norway, and also the co-author of a PLOS biology study on this. 29 authors from 10 countries analyzed this data and now say it will impact 2 billion people who live near the oceans who depend upon it for food and their income. And these are the poorest people. Quote, we're making a big mess of the oceans. Climate change is having a major impact, illustrating the need for urgent actions to reduce emissions. Separately, this has to do with the smart meters. I'm suggesting you not allow a smart meter in your home at all. They have lied to you, and we can prove they have lied to you. Here is the latest research report from a series of authors, including Donald Hillman, and John Holton, Professor Emeritus, MSU, and Ronald Powell, PhD from Harvard University. They have a report in Bioinitiative Report, The Rationale for Biologically Based Public Exposure Standards for Electromagnetic Radiation. But here's the results. Quote, this is from Wi-Fi, cell towers, etc. It shows the different diseases that you can end up with and the incidence from being as close as 3 feet, the power density 1 meter, 3 feet from smart appliances. And it goes on to talk about thyroid cancer, quote, increasing at a rate of 6.5% per year, making it the fastest increasing cancer in the United States, according to the National Cancer Institute. Medical authorities do not know the cost of increased thyroid cancer, but they're saying that it's the electromagnetic hypersensitivity, and that's causing the TSH, the thyroid dysfunction, liver dysfunction, chronic inflammation process. Also, another study assessed the role of exposure of radio frequency radiation emitted from either mobile phones or base stations and its relations to human hormone profiles. And this was from the Canadian Society of Clinical Chemists, and it showed significant, quote, increase in cortisol, ACTH, thyroid hormones, prolactin, and testosterone levels. And there are over 20 studies, each one showing some negative physiological effect by being around these electromagnetic sources, including the smart meters. They affect humans, they affect animals, and I have all the studies right here in front of me. So once again, what we started over 20 years ago, telling you how dangerous cell phones were, we're continuing to say they're really dangerous. Just don't use them. If you use them, you risk ending up imbalancing hormones, causing different problems in your body, and we don't want to see that happen. And tomorrow, I'll talk about Monsanto, the rural debt, and almost 300,000 suicides. Also tomorrow, from Kevin Ryan, Global Research, how the National Security Agency spying and lying relates directly to 9/11, with some very specific Freedom of Information Act documents that show that the National Security Agency knew in advance of these terrorist al-Qaeda members being in the United States and what they were planning. And yet we've been led to believe they didn't know anything. And they didn't have the security system to determine if there was a problem, and hence the need for all of the security systems post-9/11. Not true. We'll expose that. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate being able to share positive, insightful information that can empower us and allow us to live a longer and healthier life. And if you haven't listened to this past week's Obamacare commentary that I did, I wrote an hour commentary on why I'm opposed to Obamacare. It has nothing in the world to do about Democrats, Republicans, debt, none of that. But the fact that it doesn't make anyone healthier actually will hurt more people. And who's behind it? Who profits from it? And how it's just one more massive failed bureaucracy that does not address our real and authentic needs. Instead, we should absolutely demand and protest for a single payer that includes all people and won't cause us bankruptcy, can't exclude us from the kind of coverage we want, that honors us and actually implements preventative programs in the nation that is rife with disease. Have a nice day, everyone. You can go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, go to the archives, download that show. I'll see you tomorrow.